2:30 to 4 Monday to Friday. It is the Blitz here on AM 1450 KATE. Mitch Widmar here with you. Going to the phone lines, our guest today, as he's kind enough to take time every week to hop on the program, Jim Suhan of the Star Tribune, has his own podcast network. You can find that at MNSPN.com. This segment, as always, is brought to you by Greenlee Golf. Jim, thank you for the time talking Twins, talking Gophers today. And we'll start with Paul Molitor's club. They just finished up a sweep of the White Sox. Yesterday was the last day to make trades and have those players be active and be able to be on a postseason roster. The Twins were quiet, although the teams around them, primarily Seattle and the Angels, made some moves. The offense with Minnesota, now that we know the severity of Buxton's injury, seems set and he should be good to go relatively soon. Were you okay with the Twins kind of standing pat?
Well, I don't know if it matters whether I was okay with it. I think it's logical, and I think this is the path that has been clearly set by this front office. They are enjoying the success. They want to help the team in little ways that they can, but they're clearly not going to trade away any prospects to, you know, for a whatever percentage chance they have to make the playoffs, to win a playoff series, to get to a real, you know, to win a first round playoff game, to get to a real playoff series. You know, the internal view is that this is, it's wonderful to have unexpected success, but this is not a bet they want to double down on. And to get, you know, to get Upton, to get Verlander, you would have to trade away Nick Gordon. You would have to trade away somebody on your current major league roster who's helping you win now. They don't really have need another outfield bat, you know, now that the outfield is producing the way it is. They want their young players to continue to develop. So this, you know, I know the fan base is like, let's win right now. The front office is thinking, let's win now and for the next 5 to 10 years. And there are just no deals out there that were really conducive to maintaining that plan.
I feel like I ask you every single week, but another week has passed since we have last chatted, and the Twins still lead the second AL wildcard spot. Now they're creeping up on the Yankees for the first wildcard spot. Do you like this team's chances to hold down the fort through the month of September here?
I kind of do, but there are just so many teams involved, and the Angels suddenly got hot. The Orioles have suddenly gotten hot. The Yankees have not, you know, they've been struggling, but they still, you look at the power arms of the bullpen, if they can just get Judge and Aaron Hicks and some people going again, that looks like a really, potentially really good team. So it's just when there are this many teams, the Twins just can't stumble, you know? They need to keep really playing at a high level, because one slump, when there are this many teams involved, can bury you. And the pitching is still, you know, worrisome. But it has been a blast to watch the young talent rise. And Buxton told me yesterday that he was really scared when he hurt his hand. He used the word hamate in interviews, and then he told me later, it was not the hamate. I'm glad I was wrong and sore, but I want to play right now. Rosario's been brilliant. Polanco's been brilliant. So they need Buxton to be able to, you know, get back to swing the way he was swinging, and they need Snow back in the lineup. If you put Snow back in the lineup and get him going again in the middle of what everybody else is doing, including Dozier and Mauer really producing, you're going to have a 7, 8, 9 deep lineup, which is what you want.
Jim Suhan of the Star Tribune, our guest this afternoon, has his own podcast network. You can find it at MNSPN.com. This being brought to you by Greenlee Golf. I know last week, Jim, we had talked about a couple of losses that if the Twins came up short this year, those would be the ones that we'd go back and they'd drive us crazy and they would haunt us. Could yesterday's win classify as the exact opposite? They were down 1, bottom 9. They went on a walk-off hit by pitch.
Yeah, and it's really interesting, isn't it, that being in the ballpark, being around the players before the game, being in the press box, when they fell down one run in the top of the ninth, Belial gave up the home run, and then Belial kind of wriggled out of some more trouble and limited it to one run. I really felt like everybody in, who knows baseball, was thinking, oh, they got this, you know? And that's, listen, the odds are against you scoring one run in any given inning, especially when you're facing another team's closer. And I really felt like this team, the way they've been playing, the way the lineup has been producing, with who was coming to the plate, you thought, oh, they'll probably find a way to score a run here, and then they have scoring two. There is a great feeling around this team right now. It's not as boisterous as the 2015 team, because Torrey Hunter isn't in there doing crazy stuff every day. It's a kind of a quiet team. But there is a great, you know, the great thing about young players kind of figuring it out is there's a joy that goes along with playing like this.
What's the mood been like in the clubhouse the last couple of times you've been around? Does this team, you mentioned it's kind of a quieter clubhouse, but I feel like every clubhouse will have a couple of characters. Does this team overall, do they have kind of that swagger that you want to see as you enter September in a playoff hunt?
I don't know that they have a swagger. I don't think they know how to swagger. They haven't learned how yet. And, you know, the interesting thing about the Twins' history is when they won in 87-91, they had clubhouse full of characters. Puckett, you know, Gladden, Herbeck. I mean, you walk in there and somebody would make you laugh within the first 5 minutes you were in there. The 2000 team, Torrey, Corey, Minkiewicz, Jack Jones, Guardado, Hawkins. These people made you laugh, at least made me laugh every time I went in there. They were just great personalities. This team isn't really like that. You have a lot of players who speak Spanish and really don't speak much English, so maybe they're saying really funny stuff and I just don't hear it. Sano was the biggest personality in there, and he's still, you know, he's still kind of cautious when it comes to speaking English. There's no Torrey Hunter figure. You know, Chris Jimenez might have the best personality in the clubhouse, and he's a backup catcher who only plays when other people are hurt. So it's not a big personality team. It's not a big boisterous team. I don't sense swagger. I remember this team is young players saying, okay, I'm starting to get it. And not only am I now playing to have stats and to stay in the big leagues, but now I'm actually playing to win games where this is so much fun. It feels more like summer camp than anything else in there right now.
I like that analogy. It feels like summer camp. A lot of people, when they look at the youth of a team, whether it's Major League Baseball, the NFL, NBA, it can worry them a little bit like a fan. It can, you know, worry their perception and what they expect of the team. For those players themselves, there's so many youngsters, Polanco, Kepler, Rosario, Buxton, the list goes on and on. If we try to turn it into a positive, could it be that they're almost like naive to all this and they don't recognize the pressure they should be feeling? I remember when the Cubs went through their little run last year and ended up winning the World Series, David Ross, who was one of the veterans on the team, had said the cool aspect of it was there were so many young guys, Addison Russell, Javi Baez, Chris Bryant, that they almost didn't realize the nature, the scope of everything that they were going through, and he thought some of it was because they were too young to really grasp it.
I think there's an element to that. They're just enjoying playing baseball, they're enjoying playing, you know, alongside each other, and I don't think they feel pressure. I think they feel like this is just fun. This is an opportunity. You know, a lot of these players came up through the minors together. They're friends. They're enjoying just being in the big leagues. I don't think they really get pressure. Maybe if they were leading the division right now, they would feel a lot of pressure to hold on to that. We saw that with the 2001 Twins, who, you know, really were an excellent team most of the season, and then really when the Indians put their feet on the gas, the Twins were like, uh-oh, how do we handle this? You know, it's a good thing for a young team to kind of be in, they're both in a position where they're kind of in the playoffs, and yet they still have things to chase. They're not really contemplating things. They're just chasing the team ahead of them.
Is there a dude in that clubhouse that the guys sort of flock towards as a team leader? I feel like with most teams, you can pinpoint a couple of options. With the Twins, it seems like there could be a variety. There could be a bevy of options.
I think Dozier is the closest thing to that, because to be a leader, like, you know, Eddie Rodado was a great character in his clubhouse, and he was a leader for his bullpen mates. But it's hard to lead a team when you're sitting in the bullpen all game. It really needs to be an everyday player, and I think Dozier is the closest thing to that. But Dozier, you know, he's not loud. He's a good talker. He's a good interview. He's very willing, but he's not like Torrey. He's just not Torrey Hunter. He's not Kirby Puckett. He's kind of a nice, quiet kind of leader, but he is the right kind of personality to lead.
Jim Suhan, our guest this afternoon, kind enough to join us here on The Blitz, covers a bunch of Minnesota sports, of course, for the Star Tribune, has his own podcast network at MNSPN.com. The Twins right now, you mentioned the AL Central standings. They're 6.5 back of the Indians, and it seems unlikely, but they're within shouting distance. Even post-Verlander to the Astros, Jim, has Cleveland emerged as the team to beat in the American League from your perspective?
I think so. If they can just be healthy going into the postseason, I think they're the best team in the league. The Astros obviously were the most dominant team in the American League for a long stretch. They have fallen off, and their pitching is a little shaky. And Verlander, it's nice to add Verlander. I'm not sure he solves their problems. He just might give them a little bit of a boost. I still think Cleveland's the best team. And I thought, of course, Cleveland was awfully close to winning it all last year.
Twins start a series tonight with the Royals at Target Field. Kyle Gibson slated to pitch tomorrow. His last two starts have been a lot better. Some have said it's due to him sliding over on the mound a bit. I'm sure he's been asked, maybe has commented about it. I haven't seen those quotes yet from Kyle Gibson. Are you buying into that notion that some of this success is him changing where he's at on the mound?
Yes, and that's why baseball to me is so fascinating. It's why it's such a rewarding sport to write about, because sometimes in baseball, some tiny little adjustment can change everything. A pitcher slides over on the mound. He changes his slider grip a little bit. He gets he figures out how to take a mile or two an hour off his changeup, and all of a sudden everything changes. And that's what I love about the game. And Gibson was horrific in this game of a doubleheader a couple weeks ago. I ripped him for it. I feel like he's really let his franchise down this year. And of course, the way baseball works, that failure, that utter failure, led him to make some adjustments, and he survived against the White Sox, and then he really pitched well against the Blue Jays, and now maybe he'll be one of the big factors in them making the playoffs down the stretch. You just don't know. So, I give him credit for adapting and also showing some guts in his last couple of outings.
You referenced the name Matt Belisle before in light of what happened yesterday. He gives up the home run in the top of the ninth inning, then was able to finagle out of some trouble. Twins score two, bottom of the ninth. We know the story. They win the game. How confident are you, Jim, with Matt Belisle potentially still moving forward as the guy to close the door in the ninth inning here in September?
I'm not. I just don't think he misses enough bats. I think his fastball's too straight. And when you sign veteran relief pitchers in free agency, they're almost always just a coin flip. Often when you sign a reliever in free agency because he had a good year previously, and if a reliever has a good year previously, it probably means he gets overused too, because if you're having a good year, your managers are going to call you a lot. And it's so frequent, so often you see the guy just not be able to do it 2 years in a row. He just doesn't inspire confidence for me. I'd almost rather see Hildenberger, Buznitz, and Taylor Rogers just find a way to divide up the last couple of innings and move Belisle to a less stressful position.
Jim Suhan with us this afternoon, brought to you by Greenlee Golf. I wanted to shift over to the Gophers as we finish things up. They won their season opener 17-7 at TCF Bank Stadium last night over Buffalo. Less than stellar. Actually, for me, I don't know if I'm in the minority here, but it actually was a bit of a snooze fest, even though the game was close as it kind of drug on, just not a lot of points scored. We'll start with this, actually, Jim. You don't strike me as an active, row the boat, rah-rah kind of person. Not saying you aren't a PJ Fleck guy, but caving into all the surrounding noise, you don't strike me as someone who falls into that stuff. Is that a fair assessment?
That is very fair. And here's the thing. You can be I'm not a fan, so let me look up another word. You can be a believer in what PJ Fleck has done. Listen, you look at his resume, and you got to love the way he's built his career. And you got to love the fact that he took a Western Michigan team that was terrible and won 13 games with it. That's all legitimate stuff. This guy was the top coaching candidate on the market last year. So you can believe all that stuff without believing that saying the word elite every sentence somehow actually does something to help your program or help your credibility. It doesn't. It damages your credibility when you say everything's elite. That was a lousy college football game last night. They played poorly. They beat a terrible team, and they didn't really solve their quarterback problem, and they didn't get their running backs going, who were the strength of the team. It was a bad game for this program. And PJ saying it was an elite victory afterward, it just makes you not want to believe anything he says.
I actually thought neither quarterback, Connor Rhoda, Demery Croft, really distinguished himself last night, either of them. I thought, to be honest, Jim, the Buffalo quarterback, name is escaping my mind. I thought he actually looked like the best of the three quarterbacks we saw last night from the two teams.
I would agree with that, and I would say, having watched the team, Rhoda last year, having watched them a little bit this year, having watched that first game, my view is, Connor Rhoda is a senior, and he almost left the program. He started one career game. He's not a part of the future. Fleck has kind of started hinting that he knows that this isn't going to be a great season, that he's looking toward the future. Why not play the younger quarterback? I thought Croft handled himself as well as Rhoda. He's more athletic. He handled that last drive really well. He ran for a couple of first downs. He beat a blitz with his legs, which is a big thing to see in college football. And he throws the ball about as well as Rhoda, not as powerfully, but probably as accurately. Why not go with a kid? Maybe if you give Croft a lot of snaps this year, he's ready to help you win next year.
We'll wrap it up on this. I'm curious, what are your expectations? I don't know whether it's win losses or just seeing the growth and the maturation of this team, of this program this year under PJ Fleck here in year one of the new regime. What are your expectations for the Gophers this season?
I've been thinking it's about a 6-win team that doesn't do very well in the Big Ten, and down the stretch they have a brutal schedule. I think they get beat up. I would say, you know, it would be a good season for PJ Fleck if he can find a way to win 7 games. And if he ends up with a signature victory, you know, one big victory, one big upset where you can say, this is what this program can be. Because if he wins 5 or 6 and doesn't beat a good team, then, you know, all the elite stuff's going to sound really silly all offseason.
Find his work in the Star Tribune, his podcast network at MNSPN.com. Jim, as always, we appreciate the time. Thank you.
Hey, thanks, Mitch.
More Twins talk. We've got Brandon Warren of Zone Coverage next right here on The Blitz.